WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio presents Lehigh Valley Discourse. Provocative, informative, and newsworthy, Lehigh Valley Discourse brings you the people and the issues that move and shape our region here on WDIY.
Good evening, Lehigh Valley. This is Sally Hanlon for Lehigh Valley Discourse this evening, and I'm glad you're able to join us. We have a topic that I think most of our listeners will be interested in hearing, and that's about this pandemic and its impact on our Lehigh Valley small business community. I would like to start the program by quoting something from the National Federation of Independent Businesses that I was able to pick up. Quote, 2020 is now behind us, but what happened in 2020 will not stay in 2020. It will spill into 2021 with a vengeance. COVID-19 is spreading at record rates, and hospitals are at capacity in many states. Several vaccines were proven effective in trials approved for emergency use and now being distributed. But business restrictions and consumer spending shifts are still firmly in place and will be until the spread of COVID-19 is largely curbed. The drop in small business optimism was historically large. Taking the substantial weaknesses in the outlook for sales and business conditions in 2020 was the reason for most of this decline. And this brings new COVID threats and uncertainty about economic policy with the new administration in Washington. New support programs for consumer spending and grants for small firms are rolling out. It's a foot race between using up financial resources and getting the virus under control so the economy can open up and Main Street can get back to work. End of quote. On this topic tonight, I think I have two of the most important people in the Lehigh Valley joining us. The first is Chris Hudock, who is the director of the Rising Tide Community Loan Fund of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley, and Brett Smith, who's the director of Lehigh University's Small Business Development Center. And as a means of disclosure, I need to tell you that I was at one time an employee of the Small Business Development Center, and I am on Chris's board at Rising Tide Community Loan Fund. Okay, first, I'm going to ask each of these gentlemen to give us a brief introduction to themselves, a sort of a mini bio, and I'm going to ask Chris if he would go first.
Thank you, Sally. Thanks for the invitation. As Sally said, I'm Chris Hudock. I'm with the Rising Tide Community Loan Fund. I've been here for 15 years. The Rising Tide is a subsidiary of the Community Action Committee of Lehigh Valley. We are an unregulated financial institution. We're known as a Community Development Financial Institution, a CDFI, and we are certified by the U.S. Treasury. We provide both lending and technical assistance to small businesses, and we generally work with those who are not yet bankable, with the ultimate goal of getting them to the point where their bank can assist them.
And Chris, your territory with the Rising Tide includes?
We cover Lehigh, Northampton, Carbon, Monroe, and the upper portion of Bucks County.
And that is basically, as he said, businesses that aren't bankable yet. Usually it's a fair amount of startups, but it can be an existing business, correct, Chris?
That's correct, yeah. It's about almost a 50-50 mix.
Brett, Small Business Development Center has been around quite a while, and you are relatively new as the director, what, 2 years now?
Yep, it started in July 2019, so yeah, just over about a year and a half.
Could you share with our listeners your background? Because you come from an interesting background.
Yes, thanks, Sally, for having us. Brett Smith with the Lehigh University Small Business Development Center. We've been around, we just celebrated our 40th year in existence last year. We, similar to Chris's organization, we provide technical assistance to small businesses at any stage, whether it's pre-venture, newly started, or existing growth businesses. We cover all of Lehigh and Northampton County, as well as Upper Bucks and Northern Montgomery counties. My background personally, I was in community banking. Again, I've been with the SBDC. I'm in my 7th year now there. I started originally in the procurement side of our house, helping businesses sell to government, then moved into the international trade side before becoming director in July of 2019.
Great. And Chris, you were a banker as well, correct?
Yeah, I've been doing this for too long. 1988, I started at Lehigh Valley Bank. So.
Oh, wow, and that's a name from the past, huh?
That is a name from the past.
Okay. Well, thank you both for agreeing to be on our show this evening and sharing with our listeners sort of what's happening in the Lehigh Valley with this pandemic and its impacts. Now, before we can talk about the businesses that maybe you serve or counsel, let's talk about your individual organizations, because you've had to do some adjusting and reimagining of your products and services while you've been trying to help clients understand and learn about this changing environment. So I'm going to ask Brett first, in what ways have you changed your organization, or do you work differently today than you did a year ago?
Yeah, we've, again, like most organizations, we've gone completely digital at this point. We were already, that was one of my goals when I took over as director, was to make the SBDC more technology forward. Again, small business owners access information in different ways, and so we needed to be able to be accessible anyways as much as we could. When the pandemic hit, the months of March through June are pretty much a blur, I'm sure to Chris as well, and we were forced to, in a good way, we communicated internally as a team, improved drastically using different tools, different technology. But we also made it easier for clients to access us. Business owners needed information. One of the things that we noticed, especially in those first few months of the pandemic, was business owners were really just looking for somebody to talk to. In an age where there were resource guides and emails and webinars and everything else happening daily, just being able to talk to a human person was sort of a difference maker. So we made it easy for anybody, whether they already worked with us or were new to us, to be able to access us. And we've really kind of, as everybody has, changed our model to digital, but it's really given us a lot of ways to improve once we're allowed to go back and do things.
So was there a prioritization of the types of services that you offered? Because you mentioned international, you mentioned government, you've mentioned counseling, startups, and you start your business, that type of thing. So did you have to prioritize what came first as far as getting to the digital point?
Yeah. Our main focus at the beginning was idle PPP, just options to stay open and kind of what are our next steps. So really where a lot of our client base had previously been a startup to pre-venture side, we were getting a lot more existing businesses, which is a great thing. So we aren't, whereas normally we would have one or two people on our team focusing, everybody was on deck to talk about that. So we made it easy. They could schedule an appointment, talk to anybody really at any time they were available. We would go through and we would do webinars to kind of get some information out there. But really, it was just trying to guide people through the changes that happened. It would seem as soon as we would talk about it, they would go out of date. So it was it was as much of a learning curve for us as it was for them.
You must have felt like an accountant because everything maybe seemed to understand 1 year changes to the next year. I would assume, and that's not a good word, but I would assume that the changes that you've made are going to be a permanent part of your model.
Absolutely. It's forced all of us to become more technologically capable. And as client, as businesses really go into this new post-pandemic world where technology is going to be a factor, we realize people consume information differently. People want to access us in a way that we normally haven't been available. So again, a lot of what we do, while we really want to get back to doing live events, and interact with people one-on-one, all of this is going to stay and we're going to get better at it as we go.
And Chris, what about you? What about the rising tide? How are you working differently today than you did a year ago? And do you think this is a permanent change?
Our typical participant, we often work with low to moderate income individuals who don't have the resources that they need today. So for a lot of those that we work with, technology was a problem. All the loan applications, the grant applications, the emergency help, you had to have technology to access that. So initially, for the first 2 weeks when this hit and back in March, nobody was here in the office. And it became necessary for me. Now, we've got very limited staff in the office, and we're rotating hours to try to minimize the number of people that are physically present. But I've been in the office consistently since March. Because we just found that people, to Brett's point, people needed to speak to somebody. They also needed somebody to physically help them upload documents, scan documents, enter information onto computers that they may not have actually had. So while we're doing some things differently, we're certainly using the technology that Brett referenced, holding meetings virtually, things such as that. We still do have that one-on-one component. I think going forward, what we're going to see is that mix, just because of the nature of who we work with. We're always going to have to be available to meet face-to-face with those that we're trying to help. But we've, at the same time, we've got to help them move along because, you know, as many small business owners found, if you were not skilled from a technology standpoint and knew how to enter information and upload documents onto an application, you were really at a disadvantage. And you know, we've got to be here to help those people.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, you know, as we go forward, everything that I've been reading really speaks to technology maybe being in the lead, with some of the face-to-face almost being secondary as we go forward, just because of the time and things changing so quickly.
Yeah, people are they're being forced into it, whether you're ready for it or not. It's here.
Absolutely. So you sort of went on this already, Chris, but aside from people not being totally technology ready, what did you find to be some additional challenges for your clients during 2020?
Well, for our clients, it was just a lack of preparation. Again, we often find that the startup businesses, those that lack the resources of some of the more mature, well-financed businesses, they may not have had an accountant that they could have called up and say, hey, I need my last 3 years of tax returns. They're literally digging through a shoebox trying to find that paperwork. They just don't have the financial records. Some of the grant applications, you had to know what your loss was during a certain period of time, and they had no idea. Okay, they just knew they were in desperate need. So there was certainly that issue, and then the small business owners, I think this was everybody, you know, just as, you know, we were faced, Brett and I were faced with, okay, do we go into the office, you know, do we expose our staff to this? Small business owners dealing with the same issue. You know, do you open your doors? Do you go into the SBDC or the Rising Tide and sit down with somebody that you don't know, and are you safe? And so there was all kinds of challenges that they were dealing with. So it's been an interesting time, to say the least.
Very, very confusing time for a lot of people. Brett, what have you found? A very similar experience as Chris, or can you add anything different to that?
Sure. Very similar. Some different aspects. I agree that for those that did have an accountant, everybody was calling their accountant. So trying to get all that information was difficult at any stage. I think it highlighted a lot of things, you know, not to say there's any good that comes out of it, but I think it will help business owners, you know, understand the need to be prepared for the future, to have this information in a drawer somewhere that you'll find it when you need it, but now to have that information at the ready. You know, the biggest thing that is really facing our businesses is really uncertainty. In the beginning, it was just knowing, you know, where to find the right information. I think that's still an issue. And just knowing what comes next. Again, none of us thought in March we'd still be doing this today. So what our goal has really been is to direct businesses to the right information. And there's a lot of information out there, and making sure they're getting it from the official sources. The other thing from a financing point, you know, certainly technologies we talked about too, but from financing, is as the programs, EIDL, PPP, you know, the different local grant programs that have gone on, as those come and go and are mostly, except for PPP, kind of going away, getting back into traditional financing, a lot of businesses are just uncertain, you know, how much more debt do I want to take on, that they need it, but it's tough to show, you know, a profit given 2020. So I think just that uncertainty about the future is really top of mind.
It was interesting. I got contacted by a prospect last week who had a client who was looking to buy some type of motel down in the shore area, and wanted to have projections done as to, you know, what they could provide for financing. And it's like, where do you begin? You know, because obviously 2019 is not going to help, nor is 2020 as far as doing projections. And how do you get there from here? So, yeah, it is very confusing. You both talked money a little bit, so let's talk about that. I mean, we had a number of agencies, organizations that reached out to our small business population, whether it was Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton, Lehigh County, Northampton County, and offered money. And I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that most of these were either grant programs or loan to grant. Now, I'm not talking PPP at this time. I'm just talking local money. Chris, I know that you had some experience with some of this local money, and Brett, you did as well. So I'm going to ask Brett if he could just talk about that experience with the local money, and then we'll get into the PPP, the CARES situation.
Sure. One of the things that's come out of all this is I think it's been great that the local governments have been able to have that effect. One of the biggest problems in the beginning was just getting money out the door. PPP and EIDL were slower to roll out, that the counties, the cities, and other organizations stepped up and got the money out the door, which I think was it was much needed, and I think it sets a model for the future. We did, one, as an SBDC, we did receive our own pot of CARES funding to help us expand and provide assistance, which has been indispensable as we go through this. Additionally, we did partner with Northampton County for a technical assistance grant, which provided more developed technical assistance that's normally out of our scope, but was able to provide some local experts just to think about, again, things for the future to help sustain growth going forward. And the biggest issue with the CARES funding was really just the deadline. When it was originally passed in April, we all figured it was going to be over. So there was a lot of cramming at the end, to be able to get the information, get it launched, and get the information out to people in time. But, it's nice to see that it's been extended as well.
I believe we're going to take a short break right here. My guests this evening are Brett Smith, who is the director of the Lehigh University Small Business Development Center, and Chris Hudock, who is the director of Rising Tide Community Loan Fund, which is a subsidiary of Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. You are listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse.
This is WDIY Executive Director Greg Caponia. As we enter 2021, we are aware of the challenges facing small businesses working to retain their customer base while reaching out to new customers. If you run a small business, let us help you get the word out. For the next 4 months, we will be offering affordable underwriting messages geared to small business. For information, please send an email to greg@wdiy.org. Thank you.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture, from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Brittany, and Galicia, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar, every Thursday from 7 to 9, here on WDIY.
Welcome back. You are listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse this evening. This is Sally Hanlon, your host. My guests this evening are Chris Hudock, who's the director of Rising Tide Community Loan Fund, which is a subsidiary of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley, and Brett Smith, who's the director of Lehigh University's Small Business Development Center. Before the break, we were talking about some of the loan programs and grant programs that have come out in our region. Not necessarily the PPP or the CARES program right now, but just what our individual cities, Allentown, Bethlehem East, and the counties of Lehigh and Northampton, have done to support our small business community. And Brett was talking about that and some of the technical assistance grants that have been out there to help small businesses get to understand technology and get a little bit more advanced in their own process. Now I'd like to ask Chris the same question. Let's talk about your engagement with these loan programs that were regional in focus. Can you give us some background as to Rising Tide's involvement, your involvement, et cetera?
Sure. So it was almost immediately after the pandemic set in that Northampton County realized that this was going to be a problem, and they had reached out to us. It was in March already. And within a week, we were able to develop and begin funding. They were offering small loans to truly small businesses, those that really needed to help, and they were at a 0% interest rate. So it was a loan, and it is something that, is expected to be paid back, but the individuals, the businesses, I should say, were able to borrow these funds for a year at 0% interest. The normal paperwork that's required for the underwriting process was probably knocked down to about 25% of what was required, so the turnaround time was very quick. And we've heard some really positive, it saved a lot of businesses. I got to give them credit. I mean, they really helped save some businesses with that initial shock. And it was really those that weren't available and that weren't able to access the federal programs. This helped buy some time for those small businesses. So it was a nice feature. And then there were other programs that the counties and the cities ran that they chose other avenues. So I know there were some grants that were run through the local chamber of commerce, and some of the cities themselves had some of their own grant programs. So, you know, for small businesses throughout the Lehigh Valley area, there was, in most cases, something that was made available to them on the local level to try to help them.
And I would imagine for both you, Chris, and Brett, that you got questions about all these programs, so you and your staff needed to be up to date as best possible. Is that correct, Chris?
Yeah, you're certainly correct. And it was, you know, and I'm sure Brett felt the pain more than we did. You know, for some of the programs, that was near impossible because the rules literally changed almost every day. And that's not meant to be a criticism. It was just, you know, this happened so fast and nobody was ready for this. You know, I think everybody in a rush to try to help rolled things out and said, oh, well, we've got a problem here. And then they had to try to address that. And, oh, somebody's getting a Lamborghini. They shouldn't be getting a Lamborghini. Let's try to address that loophole. So, yes, that certainly kept us busy. And it was an important role, even though we weren't part of delivering the funds. Certainly as organizations that want to help small businesses, we had to tell people where the help was available because that's the phone didn't stop ringing. And it's just like, who can help me?
Yeah.
Everybody was in dire need.
Well, and I imagine, in addition to your phones ringing, your websites got hit pretty bad, and you're trying to keep up to date with everything. Was that your case, Brett, as well?
Oh, absolutely. It was, like what Chris said, it was trying to keep up with all the programs. You know, certainly led to, it's certainly understandable, the government was trying to roll out a $300 billion program in like a week, which is certainly a task to go through. And caused a lot of frustrations with businesses, understandably. There was a program coming out and the rules kept changing. So that's where that kind of human connection came in, as Chris attested to, where just being able to talk them through it, talk about the guidelines, certainly we would get some of the brunt of that. But again, we were one of the few options to actually talk to somebody. So we just did our job and got them through it and found what could work.
And you're going to have to correct me here, Brett, if I'm wrong, but the CARES Act, did that come down through the Small Business Administration from the federal government?
So part of it did. The PPP and the EIDL program were a joint effort between the Treasury and the SBA, but I think the bulk of it was through Treasury.
So your experience with clients, I'm going to direct this to both of you, but your experience with clients, now let's talk about the PPP program, the CARES program. You mentioned a little bit of the frustration of things changing. What else did you hear from your clients regarding the rollout of this or the impossibility or who got what? Brett?
Yeah, a lot of it was, again, a lack of clarity, knowing what amounts they should apply for, which banks were doing it. It was portrayed as a lot of banks were just going to open their doors and let businesses in, but they got overwhelmed. And then, the legislation and the rules didn't necessarily match up, and it was just a lot of that lack of clarity. With that, it just, again, when you're trying to roll out that kind of a program, it's difficult. So trying to walk them through, trying to help them find banks, trying to connect them to other lenders that might be able to help. And then additionally, with the forgiveness aspect as well, trying to figure out who's eligible for what amounts, when can you start applying for forgiveness, all of that. It really, it's still going on. And, that's, thankfully things are getting a little more clarified. But, as we roll out the second round, we're kind of back to that.
We'll talk about that second round a little bit later. But regarding the forgiveness aspect, as I recall from some of my clients, they put in the request for forgiveness in November, and yet things have not been clarified. Brett, is that correct? It's still sort of outstanding?
The forgiveness piece is a little unique in that it's, even though there is a standard process set forth by the Treasury and SBA, it is up to the individual banks as to how they do it. And additionally, with the stimulus bill that got passed at the end of December, there was some additional clarification on forgiveness for businesses that received under $150,000. So I think what's happening is a lot of banks are just holding off on processing forgiveness applications until that's clarified. Unfortunately, borrowers do have a 10-month kind of grace period between when their covered period ended and when they would start getting charged for payments. So at least there is some room. But yeah, I think most banks are just trying to hold off until things are more definitive.
From a business standpoint, would the business have had to at least apply for forgiveness before the end of the year, even though the bank is holding off making a determination?
Not necessarily, no. That's where the 10 months comes into play. They have up to then to be able to file for it.
Okay, interesting.
But again, each bank's process is going to be a little different.
Well, and I'm going to get to that too. But Chris, I know that you don't deal directly with PPP or CARES, but did you experience any frustrations from those clients that you dealt with regarding either the regional programs or the fact that they were trying to do regional and PPP?
Yeah, we certainly did. And I will say this before I get into the negative aspect of it. I got to admit, the majority of the small business owners that we dealt with were actually pleasant, surprisingly, with everything they were
Great.
Facing. No, they really were. And I think that was a point of emphasis on our part. We made sure we answered the phone and we got back to everybody within a day or so. And people were just so happy to what Brett said earlier, that people, they could actually speak to somebody. So there was I heard more people saying, thank you so much for calling me back. I can't believe you actually called us back. You know, they were just happy to hear from somebody. But there is understandably a lot of frustration. There is the unknown that was mentioned earlier. We just don't know how long this is going to last. You know, we administered a statewide grant program that those funds had to be expended by the end of the year. Well, what happens now that it's January? I need help. You know, the PPP, there's deadlines for all of those things. And then there's, you know, there's just not enough funds. So, you know, the one common, I guess, in negative that we'd hear from individuals is, why did they get funded when I'm not? Okay. And, you know, I know that I have more right to these funds than this business does, or it's just desperation coming out of individuals, I think, in most cases. And I don't think they mean it to be hurtful or spiteful. I think it's just frustration. And I don't think we've seen the end of that yet, because the small businesses, you know, that did receive at least temporary funding, they're still dealing with this. And unless there's more help coming down the road, you know, I know our portfolio, we're not sure what's going to happen yet. Our businesses have fared okay, but that was anticipated. I expect, you know, as you said in your opening remarks, 2021 is where we're really going to start to see the damage, I'm afraid.
Wow. Getting back to the PPP and frustration, and goes to one of your comments, I think, Brett, you had mentioned it, but you know that the individual banks sort of make their own rules with some of this stuff, and there seemed to be an overriding concern that the banks were only, in many cases, banks were only supporting those clients that were already in their portfolio versus taking on anyone new. Is that something both of you heard?
Yes, absolutely. It was, you know, and even for some that were existing customers, there was just trying to get in touch with somebody was difficult. You know, but again, understanding that the banks got the rules the day before everything launched. So, but that was where our goal in being closely connected with the SBA is trying to find other banks or other lenders. You saw, you know, a lot, for example, I know organizations like PayPal were doing loans, were doing PPP loans. So it was, that's kind of where we came in. It's like, okay, you know, either we, you know, in our network of local banks that were doing it, or can we find you somebody else? But yes, that was certainly something that was happening.
And while I have you on the mic, Brett, what has happened, or what did happen, what is currently happening to traditional lending at this point with our financial institutions? Are you seeing any? Are they on hold?
It's slowly coming back. And that's kind of one of the, you know, that's, as I was talking about, the concerns for businesses is, you know, banks were so overwhelmed with PPP and now processing forgiveness and now the second round of PPP that traditional lending has just not been able to happen just as a fact of volume. We are starting to see some cases, but I think, again, the difficult part for the smaller businesses is going to be that, you know, their revenues are down. It's going to be tough to show a, you know, positive projections. So hopefully, you know, banks make more of a concerted effort to lend to those affected businesses, but we'll see what happens in the future.
Chris, would you say the same?
Yeah, I would. Although I would drag out the word slowly and say it very slowly. And Brett nailed it. So this reminds me of 2008 when the economy tanked. You know, it was very difficult from a regulatory standpoint and financial standpoint for banks to do lending. And as a CDFI that works with those that are not bankable, it was actually a very busy year for us. I'm thinking that once businesses gain confidence, once we can shed these masks and we're all safe to go out again, that we're going to see a significant uptick in requests for funding, because we're able to underwrite things differently than a bank, being that we're not regulated. So when, you know, they're being told they've got to tighten up a bit, we're still able to do what we do. So I expect we're going to get very busy from a lending standpoint, but I'm still seeing a lot of hesitancy. And there are still individuals that are expecting more grant money to come out. So I think till that all plays out, people are going to sit back a little bit and delay applying for funds, not knowing what your future is for your business and when there is possible more grant being made available. It's been very, very slow.
Now, Brad, I have a question for you because of your SBA connection. You know, one of the things I keep reading in McKinsey reports and other periodicals that I get on business environment, I see a lot of articles that deal with how a business should look to be more flexible, be more agile. But I'm wondering, have you been seeing or is anybody encouraging the financial institutions to look at things differently and change their model for lending?
Well, I think it's, as Chris said, kind of going back to 2008, I think it's just tough. I think that's where, you know, maybe some more, you know, federal guidance could come into play on expanding that access. It's tough for banks to change the rules, and because again, they're so heavily regulated as well. But I think as this comes through, and like Chris said, there's still, you know, businesses are still looking for additional funding to get them through as, you know, further stimulus planned or anything else. I think, you know, some dedicated programs to opening that up will be absolutely crucial, you know, to encourage banks to make that lending, because, you know, their financial situation is also going to be difficult as well.
Now, Brett, I noticed that the SBDC recently did a program on understanding the 2021 PPP program, and I was wondering if you could share some of the similarities, differences, challenges that this training brought to the forefront for businesses looking to get this new funding.
Sure, and as we always, you know, say, we're, you know, trying to understand PPP, you know, as it's live now, any small business, you know, and, you know, all the financial institutions are able to lend that are currently participating. In the, you know, first couple of weeks, it was limited first to CDFIs and then to smaller institutions, but now traditional banks and everybody are doing it. The unique piece, you know, a lot of it is very similar, but the unique piece is that there's an ability for those who already received a PPP loan to receive additional funds. Whether they, you know, especially if they underestimated what their initial need was in the beginning of the year. But there's also the ability for those who did not take a first round PPP to be able to, you know, apply for that first round one as well. You know, the biggest things are that you're applying for a second PPP, you need to have been in business before February 15th of 2020 and have used or will commit soon to using your entire first round PPP, but you don't need to have applied for forgiveness. So, you know, really the best step one is, you know, to check if your bank that you got your PPP loan through is still doing the second round. Not every bank is participating again just because it was such ground operations to halt for their, you know, other side of the house. But also to check with their bank, get their documents in order, and just make sure what their process is with forgiveness and everything before applying.
Okay. Will the 2021 also have the forgiveness portion to it?
Yes.
Yes. At this point in time, is there a 3-month, 6-month, do they have a deadline as to when you must apply for the 2021?
I believe there is. I don't have that date on hand right now. The other big difference for the second PPP loan is you have to have had a 25% gross revenue decline in 2020, in a quarter in 2020 compared to that same quarter in 2019. So what we're seeing, which is a good thing from a business standpoint, is that some of businesses that qualified don't qualify for the second round because their business has increased. You know, it might not be to the levels they wanted, but it's still good. So there is that difference, but I don't have that specific end date on hand.
And that can be found probably by going on a website somewhere, correct?
Yes. If you go to, I believe it's sba.gov/coronavirus, and that has all the PPP, EIDL, and all of those programs there.
Terrific. Thank you. Now, the other thing that I want to talk about, and I believe we're going to be going into a short break, but when we come back, I'd like to talk about how the programs for 2020 seem to focus on the for-profit. But there's also a large part, at least in our valley, of nonprofits. So listeners, stay tuned. We're going to ask our folks here to talk to us about the differences and what's available for for-profits and nonprofits. Our guests this evening are Chris Hudock, who's the director of Rising Tide Community Loan Fund, a subsidiary of Community Action Committee of Lehigh Valley, and Brett Smith, who's the director of Lehigh University's Small Business Development Center. You are listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse. We'll be right back.
Connect to WDIY with our new app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY Live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Galactic Travels brings you hour-long soundscapes of electronic, ambient, and space music. That's Thursday night at 11, right here on WDIY Allentown, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. Many choices, real voices.
Welcome back. You are listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is Sally Hanlon. I'm your host this evening, and our topic is the pandemic and our small businesses, Lehigh Valley small business community impacts. My guests this evening are Brett Smith, who is the director of Lehigh University's Small Business Development Center, and Chris Hudock, who is the director of Rising Tide Community Loan Fund, subsidiary of Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. Before the break, we were talking about funding, and we broke with the PPE funding and the fact that there's now a 2021 version of monies available with certain criteria. And Brett, you said you have a date for PPP?
Yes. So the deadline is March 31st, 2021, or when the funding runs out, whichever comes first.
Okay. So, and we might not know that until right when it runs out, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. One of the things that I was curious about, because we do have a lot of nonprofits here in the Lehigh Valley, and a lot of the grants and loan programs seem to be focused primarily on for-profit, when indeed nonprofit is a strong part of our small business community. So are there programs for nonprofits? What is available? What have you guys heard or been a part of? And I'm going to start first with Brett.
So for us, you know, our primary mission is focused on for-profit businesses. So, you know, I'm sure there are a number of programs out there. The one we're most connected to is the Shuttered Venues Operators Grant. That one is through the SBA. It has not launched yet. There are guidelines out, but they're taking their time to get the information out there. So that's for live event type organizations, such as, you know, for here in the Valley, for, you know, Arts Quest or, you know, State Theater or places like that. So, you know, that's an area where we are involved in. It's both for-profit and nonprofit. But Chris, I don't know if there's anything you've come across on the nonprofit side as well.
It's always been a challenge for that industry, unfortunately, because most of the federal money comes with the stipulation that it's for profit. You know, the grant program that we helped administer Commonwealth-wide was for profit. If I recall, I think when the counties received some of the CARES money, I believe some of the counties ran some small grants for nonprofits, but it's always been, they're vital to our community, to our way of life, but unfortunately they tend to fall into this black hole, and it's a shame, you know, they don't receive the help that they need.
And they are businesses. It's just that they handle their profitability different than a for-profit business. So it's sort of a shame that there is that, I don't know, I'm going to say false or myth about them being a real business. But I did see recently, and I don't know if either one of you are familiar with this, that our United Way announced a loan program for $1,000 to $10,000 for nonprofits. Have either of you heard about that?
I'm not familiar with it.
You're not familiar? Okay. So listeners, there may be something you might want to check on United Way website regarding this. I think I picked it up in the paper just recently that was something. And I would imagine, Brett, I mean, you said you didn't have all of the criteria for the shuttered venues, but I would imagine some of the documentation would be similar to what the businesses have experienced for the first PPP.
Yes, and from what I've seen with that, it's going to be a slightly more complicated process because it's going to go through grants.gov as opposed to a traditional loan application because it is a grant. So we're working on providing some guidance out for that. The other thing that I did come across that I remembered while we were talking is Northampton County has just announced a grant for nonprofit agencies. through their funding. So that is something else to take a look at as well.
Oh, I didn't realize that. You know, I have to give a shout out to Lamont McClure and Tina Smith of Northampton County, because as Chris mentioned, they were really out there in the beginning of March of last year with providing support for businesses. And it sounds like they are continuing to be sort of leading edge with trying to understand the impacts on their business communities. So hats off to those two executives from Northampton County. Businesses that you have worked with or industries that you guys have worked with, what has been really substantially affected? I mean, we hear about restaurants, hospitality, and tourism, and unfortunately, a decrease in those two, even though some of them may be nonprofit, impact some of our for-profit because of bringing in folks to the communities. Are there other businesses that have been severely impacted by the pandemic this past year that it's been very difficult to survive? And I'm going to start with Chris.
Yeah, I think it's fairly safe to say just about every industry has been significantly impacted, but there are certain ones that have really gone unnoticed, like you said, and rightfully, I mean, I understand why the restaurants and tourism gets all the attention. But when you think about limousines, for example, the limousine companies, you know, there are no weddings, there's no more parties anymore, there's no business travel. Dry cleaners, I'm hearing the pleas of dry cleaners because, again, people are working from home. They're not putting on suits and ties and slacks and dresses. Gyms have made the news recently, you know, just with the closeness and the physical activity, you know, fitness centers have really felt it. Anybody in the wedding industry has been significantly impacted. And then, you know, the last one I can think of right now that we've heard, it's coming around now, but at least for the first good 6 months or so, was any type of barbershop or salon where they were just prohibited from having anybody come in, or they had to, you know, space out their chairs so much that, you know, they're at such a great reduction right now.
Wow. That's a lot of our everyday life there. Brett, have you heard of any additional ones that have been more impacted than the headlines have indicated?
Yeah, going along with Chris, those kind of personal care, you know, hair salons, nail salons, massage, you know, all those types of high touch businesses are certainly suffering. The other one too, it's not really unknown, but I think it doesn't get discussed as much, are really those small retail shops where maybe it's either a small shop or it's very, you know, kind of close together, and it's difficult, you know, where businesses really thrive on that kind of interaction and experience and, you know, people just coming in and browsing. That's not there. I mean, they might be able to be open, they might be able to have some people, but it's really not the same experience. So, you know, I think it's tough, especially if they're not in a downtown area where people are walking, just to get that traffic through the door.
So both of you provide advice and support and counseling to businesses, and you probably both have a portfolio that has some of these businesses in them. What kind of help have you been able to provide them? What kind of advice are you, even though things are really unknown, people are looking for some direction, and as you said earlier, they want somebody to talk to. How have you been sort of guiding them to get themselves positioned to sort of stay the course and maybe eventually get prepared for the unknown that will happen throughout 2021? Brett, I'm going to start with you.
Sure. So really for any business, we're, you know, initially, you know, when everything started, we were talking about planning for no more than 90 days because everything was changing daily. Now we're looking, you know, I think it's important that businesses start looking more forward as, you know, as the vaccines roll out, as we hopefully later this year can get back to some level of normal. I think it's important for businesses to really take a look back, see what worked and what didn't. You know, many businesses were forced to try things, whether they were comfortable with them or they just needed to be able to provide something to their customers. See what worked, see what didn't. And also understanding that, you know, has your core customer changed? That's one of the big questions is, as, for example, restaurants that have historically didn't do takeout or delivery, are, what does your customer base look like? And what of the things that you've been doing are you going to have to continue to keep those customers? For example, if you are a retail store that has curbside pickup, is that still something you should be providing and that your customers will want? And again, same as we've talked about throughout the entire show today, is technology. Being able to have your information out there, you know, make sure it's up to date, that customers know exactly what to expect when they come to see you.
Chris, how about from your perspective with Rising Tide and your client portfolio?
Yeah, so with regards specifically to our portfolio, you know, we were back in March immediately in contact with everybody in our portfolio and let them know that we're here. So for the vast majority, you know, we've helped and we continue to help for some, you know, what is now 11 months later. You know, we've been able to assist with deferring or just can't, you know, not canceling. Well, I'm wrong. We did cancel, reduce some debt. So we've been able to help significantly with loan payments to try to buy these small businesses some time. You know, beyond our portfolio, you know, and Brett touched on a lot of what small businesses need to do. I agree. You know, you've got to accept technology. You're going to have to invest in it, even for, you know, dinosaurs like myself that don't like cell phones. You know, you better have an online presence, and you're not going to survive going forward. You know, from a different angle, you know, something that we've been trying to preach to small businesses for the last couple of years, because the reality of it is, you know, we've got a pandemic now, but something somewhere down the road will hit us again, whether it's another recession, God forbid, another environmental mess or health issue. You've got to be ready for it. And I think it's one thing small businesses fail to do is put themselves in that position financially. It's easy to say to save funds, and you're not always able to do that. But one thing a small business owner can do ahead of time is apply for that line of credit when you don't need it. Because that's when you're able to be approved for it. And the nice thing is you've got it in your back pocket so that when something like this hits, you have access to some short-term capital. And, you know, you don't have to go through the process. The banks aren't going to be clamping down because you've already have it available. And it can buy you some time. And again, I stress that that's something you should be doing when times are good. Because it's hard to get a loan when times are tough. It's easier to get it, and the banks are more receptive when you're doing well. Have that in your back pocket so that when something like this hits again, or, you know, again, like I said, the economy or whatever it happens to be, that you're a little bit better prepared to get you through that period of time until help arrives. It can make the difference between you surviving and not surviving.
Well, you know, it's interesting to hear you talk about this because, you know, one of the things I did when I was at the SBDC was start your business training. And we basically told folks to not only think about when they start up, but what's going to happen if they have to close their business. You know, what are some of the things they need to keep in mind? And I'm just wondering now if another step within between those two is consider that there's a recession, or consider that there's a, you know, some challenge to the business environment. How do you as a business owner react to that? What are the steps that you need to take and get people thinking about that from when they first start to put their business together? I don't know. So I give that to you, Brett.
So. Yeah, I think that's absolutely going to become more of our package of services in the coming year and beyond, because it's something we've always offered, whether kind of part of a general conversation or even, you know, as a specific request. But it's always tough in good times to get people to think about potential bad times. You know, they might be successful, things are going well. You don't want to think about what if. So I think it's more, unfortunately, the need for that type of work and consulting really comes with the time. So hopefully, I think since this was something that affected everybody, just about that, there'll be a lot more interest and a lot more willingness to look towards that kind of stuff in the future.
One of the things we've been hearing, and I believe in one of the Super Bowl commercials, they talked about supporting your local businesses. And I think all of the listeners know that it's extremely important that we support the local businesses, you know, whether it's, you know, the restaurants, the takeouts, so, you know, whatever we do. But one of the things that I'm sort of surprised at that I have experienced is not necessarily the on-point customer service from the businesses. Now, some of them are because, you know, the business is closed Monday through Thursday. They open on Friday. I'm thinking that maintaining that personal touch, that responsiveness for the business owner is extremely important during this time period. Have either of you had that expressed to you? I'm going to start with Brett.
I think it kind of goes along with what we talked about earlier, you know, how both Chris's organization and ours, that's really what set things apart. And I think that's going to be the same for business owners. I think their customers have a lot of anxiety about coming out. You know, I haven't been inside a restaurant since the beginning of March. And, you know, I personally would have a comfort issue with doing that until things get back to normal. So I think as people start to do that, those that provide the more welcoming experience, those that highlight their, you know, and I think this is where, you know, where businesses are going to be able to really focus their branding and their storytelling is, what is it that makes people want to come to you in a time like this? that it's your people, that's your commitment to safety. It's knowing that, you know, that they're part of your business family. So I think that's going to be, in addition to kind of that forward planning, the idea of making sure people know what you're about is also going to be very important.
Yeah, and that's your solid. Chris, any thoughts on that from your perspective?
Well, yeah, I was, you know, when Brett was speaking, I was thinking about retail specifically. And, you know, retail was, it was changing before the pandemic hit. And we as consumers are changing. And I don't know if the future consumer is going to be looking for quite that person. And it's a shame, you know, but we've fallen in love with Amazon and staying at home and having everything delivered to us. So, you know, there's not the demand now for that customer service. You know, we get mad when we don't get two-day shipping, okay? It's not, you know, I don't hear people getting so upset that they couldn't get help when they went into a location, and I'm concerned. And so I'm not sure, Sally, to answer your question, where that's in that industry, where that's going, because that was evolving before this hit, and I'm afraid that this is really pushing it over the edge, because we've all either had to or become very comfortable with sitting at home with our laptop on us in our pajamas and ordering us things at 2 o'clock in the morning. And are we ever going to go back from that?
Yeah.
I'm not sure we're going to.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I've always been a strong local shopping supporter, and I've gravitated to some of the online stuff myself this past year. And I want to kick myself when I do it, but I didn't necessarily want to go out at the particular time. So yeah, that happens. So let's talk positive a little bit. Businesses that you both have worked with that you've seen sort of really be able to adapt, whether it's through technology, through their staffing, through their product line. Can you share any examples of businesses? And you don't have to get specific names, but you can if you want to. And let's start with Brett. Are you seeing businesses that have really been able to adjust and weather this fairly well?
Yeah, we have. It's those that really kind of took that initiative at the beginning. I remember because one of our programs, we do these business walks around different downtowns, and obviously we weren't doing those in person. But as we met with different businesses, the one that stuck out in particular was, and this was back when everything was shut down, was doing, you know, sort of Facebook Live tours of the store to be able to see what products were there, to kind of at least get more of that retail experience. And I think businesses that are able to do things like that and to provide something a little different, provide a different way to access something other than the usual, are the ones that are going to succeed. And that's pretty much what we've seen.
And Chris, anything to add to that?
Yeah, the one industry that I've really seen adapt is the alcohol industry. You know, we had a number of distilleries and breweries in our portfolio that, to their credit, shifted immediately to helping all of us by making sanitizer. And I think they deserve an immense amount of credit for that, because, you know, that further impacted their business. But I think in the long term, I'm hoping the goodwill that's generated from that is a positive. You know, and Brett had mentioned it earlier, too, about knowing what your customer is going to look like going forward and what they're going to want. You know, again, staying in that industry, breweries that did not can previously, they've all just about are now offering that. And I don't think that's going to go away, because it's convenient to drive up, grab a four-pack, and hop in your car and drive away. I think that's helped. I don't want to say this is a good thing, going back to my retail comment before. You know, we've seen some retail stores close their physical location because they're able, from a financial standpoint, to do better by selling online when they're not paying the rent. They don't have the utility bills. They're doing as well as they were before, if not better. But again, you know, what's the impact on the downtown when there's no more retail stores? So they've adapted. I'm just not sure that's going to be, in the long term, a positive outcome that we're all going to benefit from. But on a positive side, you know, they kept their business afloat, and I got to give them credit for that.
Guys, we're getting to the tail end of this show, and I'm so sorry, because there's still a couple things I'd like to ask. But most importantly, could you please each give our listeners your website or the ways to contact you? And Chris, I'm going to start with you.
Sure. Thank you. So the way to reach me is, one, you can get me by phone. That is 484-893-1039. And our website, this is all one word, is simply therisingtide.org. Those are the two quickest and easiest ways to reach us.
Okay. Brett?
Sure. For us, we're operating virtually like most businesses, so the best way to get in touch with us is through our website at bdc.lehigh.edu, or you can certainly give us a call at 610-758-3980.
Now, before we wrap up the show completely, I did want Brett to talk a little bit about the upcoming Meet the Buyers Expo in 2021, which is the fifth biannual event, which helps to match small businesses with some larger businesses, and now with the sourcing and all that the pandemic has brought about with having sourcing closer to your manufacturing or your place of business has become so important. I think this is going to be important. And so, Brett, is there a date yet for this, or if people want to learn about it, how do they do that?
Sure. So the tentative date, which we have just about nailed down, is October 6th, 2021. For the website, it's lvmeetthebuyers.com. And we will be doing it in a virtual format, just because with the uncertainty coming up, it's an event that normally has a lot of close connection. We are doing it in a way where there will be some virtual matchmaking, which will hopefully create some better connections and more opportunities for engagement than, you know, an in-person event might. So it's going to be a great way to test that out and hopefully to connect even more buyers with small businesses.
And listeners, as it gets closer, I'll invite Brett back and we can talk more about LV Meet the Buyers. Now I've got to say thank you for the opportunity to give our listeners an update on the pandemic and our small business community. So thank you, Chris Hudak. Thank you, Brett Smith.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sally.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, James Johnson, who is our editor and working the boards for us this evening. And thank you, listeners, for taking the time to be a part of Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is Sally Hanlon for WDIY.